From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. White supremacist leader Richard Spencer appeared victorious in the aftermath of a high-profile appearance at the University of Florida in Gainesville on Thursday. Spencer had decided to bring his message of a white ethno-state to Gainesville months ago, alarming state and city authorities, as well as the university, and putting anti-fascist activists on notice. Thousands of Gainesville residents geared up to confront Spencer and his fascist and Nazi supporters, despite the lengthy and absurd list of prohibited items that the police had released. All told, the university and city was forced to spend $500,000 of taxpayer money to provide security for Spencer's private event, where he got to hand-pick attendees, including news reporters. The day after the debacle, I spoke with Alan Gadzia. He is the founder of the Gainesville Anti-Fascist Committee. Welcome to the program, Alan.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon.
So first, tell me what the preparations were that you were engaged in the lead up to Spencer's talk at the University of Florida. We heard a lot in the news about how police were preparing, or the very long list of prohibited items and a lawsuit around it. What preparation did you and your fellow activists do for this?
Okay, so I mean, I guess in the medium to long term, the preparation was establishing an anti-fascist committee, which happened about 14 months ago in the summer of 2016. But more specifically, that committee has been working with other groups on the Gainesville activist scene for that 14 months on various issues like getting the Confederate statue removed, etc. More specifically, it hit the headlines, I think, on August 12th, I think it was, the same day as Charlottesville. So that there was like a bombshell, you know, people were looking at the TV scenes from Charlottesville and the murders that happened there and the violence that the fascists unleashed, and the images of fascists with blazing torches. So there was a lot of shock. Within a week.
So what happened in Charlottesville spurred you and sort of warned you of what was to come in Gainesville?
Yeah, because that same day, UF confirmed that Richard Spencer would be coming to Gainesville to speak. So across that following week, there was a lot of networking that went on. And that weekend, there was an attempt to set up a much wider coalition. And there was about 50 or so people at a meeting representing probably more than a dozen. Yeah, I think it was 18 groups. Now, initially, we weren't able to get agreement amongst so many groups. There was an issue of the extent to which we would provide information to law enforcement, and most people wanted us to keep our plans and information to ourselves. But there was a smaller minority that wanted to sort of have the freedom to do what they wanted in terms of giving information out to law enforcement and other groups. Anyway, we moved on from there. That didn't lead to a coalition. There was a more looser structure. Since then, a lot of stuff happened, like the hurricanes, which, although they didn't cause devastating destruction and loss of life, it disrupted both Spencer's appearance and pushed that back by a month, and also, you know, our own lives. My house got damaged by the hurricane. So as well as trying to build a coalition to oppose Spencer's appearance and his fascist message, we were having to deal with all that other stuff. So basically, there were regular meetings of a smaller number of groups, about six or seven local activist groups, from socialist, anarchist, feminist, black nationalist, Black Lives Matter, and I'm probably leaving some out. There's an armed LGBTQ group involved in it as well,
An
and
armed
apologize.
LGBTQ group?
Well, I mean, they don't walk around all day with guns, but it's called Pink Pistols. It's a LGBTQ movement or group chapter in Gainesville that trains people in the LGBTQ community to defend themselves, including with arms. And actually, that group, I appreciate everything that group has done because they decided on the day not to go into the protest, but to defend the local meeting spaces of the Gainesville left, and were very much appreciated as a part of the movement and the anti-fascist message.
So
So basically, yeah, there was meetings going on for 2 months, and
Wow.
You know, that those meetings had several priorities. You know, some is logistical, just in terms of coordinating ourselves on social media and you know, within like group chats. Other tasks were to communicate with the media, and probably the primary task that those who showed up yesterday had, and the most difficult one, was countering the message that Richard Spencer needs to be ignored, go lock your doors, you know, pull the deadbolt and tremble. That was the message from every prominent person in Gainesville, Florida, and the USA, was just ignore Richard Spencer, and we'll cross our fingers, hope he goes away. So, you know, we have a different view of the threat that fascism can pose, and also of how to stop fascism. And so we had to go against that, you know, that avalanche of messages, unified messages from the local elected politicians, the law enforcement community, even the NAACP, and you know, religious leaders were telling people not to respond at all to Spencer. And so that was really the primary obstacle, was to get the message out as effectively as possible that fascism can be confronted. You don't need to be terrified. You know, if we all stand up together, we can show these people that they're very unpopular, and that they might have thought they were in an insurgency, but things have changed now. There's going to be a wall of opposition wherever they show up.
So, on the day of the event, that's on Thursday, we're speaking with you on Friday. Let's talk about what played out on and around the campus. We understand that police and the university and various law enforcement agencies had to spend $500,000 in security. And of course, this comes out of the city's budget. Meanwhile, Spencer's group, National Policy Institute, was asked to shell out only $10,000. In the end, he got to choose which media was allowed to cover his event. He got to hand out tickets to just, whoever he wanted to. And I understand it wasn't even a full event. So can you give us a sense of, what's the most important takeaway from how things played out on Thursday from your perspective?
From my perspective, it is you can't allow the big and famous to be effective in stopping racist movements and in stopping prejudice, because you know, the fascists said boo to them, to President Fuchs, and he his spine turned to jelly and basically gave him a blank check to do whatever they wanted. Okay, so they could have gone to court. He should have gone to court. The moral thing to have done would have been to have done the right thing, not the convenient thing. He stuck with his paycheck. He stuck with staying in with the very kind of right-wing dominated atmosphere in Tallahassee. The other takeaway would be you can ignore that, and you can successfully confront these people by bringing in, you know, all those affected, giving everyone a place, creating a big tent against fascism, and we can have fun doing it. And also, There was less violence there than people were expecting, and I wouldn't necessarily put that down to the police presence, but more to the fact that our side organized very well ahead of time, and that on the event itself, the fascists who like to be very violent were essentially intimidated into behaving a little bit better.
And how many showed up in Charlottesville? We saw hundreds. It was the sort of, Woodstock of fascism. In Gainesville, from what we could see all the way on the other side of the country, maybe a few dozen.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't go into the theater, so I've just seen the YouTube video where he has like two dozen people in there, the polo shirts and the khakis in front of the front of the auditorium, and then there were others who showed up. One of the Nazi websites told them to not display overt Nazi regalia, and mainly I think they abided by that. And so there were probably quite a few others there who, weren't wearing their Nazism on their sleeve. But at most, they probably had, I'd say at most there were, 100 Spencer supporters there. Now, I'm not, I'm not complacent. I'm not saying that, given different circumstances, he couldn't fill an auditorium in, another place in Florida or in Ohio with supporters. We need to, keep the pressure on and build bigger and bigger Gainesvilles wherever he shows up. But yeah, it was a humiliating event for Spencer. He's come out saying it was a great victory. That rings very hollow. I'm sure he left feeling very miserable at what happened here.
Now, do you also feel that the university and the city could have done better? You would imagine that in today's day and age, in 2017, that there would be no hesitation in taking a clear position against Nazism, fascism, white supremacy. But it seems as though the university and the city tried to thread the needle on this issue of free speech and really didn't, as other cities and universities have also similarly done, really didn't take a bold enough stance.
Well, I don't think, firstly, that anyone in the UF administration or the city of Gainesville definitely has hidden sympathies for fascism. But they have an outlook and a project which is basically business as usual, and so that they want to, one, avoid lawsuits. That's for them worse than actually taking the morally bad step. They'd rather take the morally worse step than have a lawsuit. And also,
So you're saying that if
I
they
think
did sort of discriminate and say, we aren't going to let, we're going to have a basic standard for who we allow to speak on our campus. If you're a racist, you're not allowed to speak. They are afraid if they take that position, they'll risk getting sued.
Well, that's one part of it. The other part, where you said earlier, in 2017, it should be obvious to denounce, extreme racism. We're south of the Mason-Dixon line here. There are, in state houses and in municipalities, lots and lots and lots of racist politicians who give speeches very, very virulently against Muslims and against gays. And it's not the case that overt Nazism or, close to fascistic ideas are, condemned completely by the political spectrum. In the state houses and, certain municipalities across the South, you've got people who have political relationships with the far right, the fascist right, the KKK. I'm not trying to say that, that's that we live in some sort of state where the KKK is an auxiliary, but there are politicians tied, Rick Scott is one of them, tied to the idea that no matter how racist the speech, no matter how racist the organization, they will mobilize the full tools in the chest to allow that racism to be appear wherever. And
so they'll bend over backwards for the racists. Meanwhile, you know, they'll you won't see that same treatment for anti-fascist or, say, groups like Black Lives Matter. In fact, you have stories about the FBI looking for ways to criminalize what they called black identity activists, even though clearly white identity activists like Spencer are seem to be a much greater threat.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there also there's a right-wing inspired ideological offensive against Antifa or Antifa, which unfortunately too many in the media have picked up. You know, trying to say that there is problems on both sides. I mean, Antifa use self-defense. Big wow. You know, that's needed when you're facing people who want to carry out a genocide. And so, you know, in terms of the politicians, they made it very, very hard for our side, the anti-fascists, to assert their constitutional rights. I mean, you can say you've got a right to assemble, but if you're not allowed to drink and hydrate on the Florida afternoon, are you really allowing that right? And they disallowed people to have water. So yeah, there is one treatment for Spencer, which is essentially, you know, mobilizing 2,000 armed people to be his bodyguard, and there's another treatment for anti-fascists, which is taking away their water, taking away their signs, taking away their hats, taking away their backpacks. At one point, I really thought that they were going to say all you can come with is a fig leaf, and you know, and then start debating whether a fig leaf could be turned into a weapon.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Alan, for joining us today. Do you want to give out the Facebook page for the Gainesville Anti-Fascist Committee?
Yeah, so the Gainesville Anti-Fascist Committee is on Facebook as Gainesville Anti-Fascists. Let me also say, in this process, our primary role was to support the students in UF and their campaign. So we essentially were cheerleaders and helpers, and their group is called No Nazis at UF. On Facebook, I think it's a cause, and also there's, you know, protest events. So No Nazis at UF is the students who led this thing, and I'm speaking for Gainesville Anti-Fascist Committee, which has Gainesville Anti-Fascists as its Facebook page.
Thank you so much, Alan, for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Sonali. Have a good day. It's a good day after October the 19th and Spencer's humiliation.
Great. Thanks so much, Alan.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Alan Gadza, the founder and member of the Gainesville Anti-Fascist Committee, and we've been discussing how anti-fascist activists responded to Richard Spencer's media spectacle in Gainesville, Florida on Thursday. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.